go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bullen.
Ben, we've got a topic today that is a spawn of our original Phantom idea.
Yeah, we should have named this Spawn of the Phantom.
That would have been a good idea because we were talking about this off air that we've actually got a lot of mileage out of just this one word, Phantom.
Yeah.
There's quite a few vehicles that like to use the Phantom moniker somewhere within the name, which is a cool name, by the way. I like it. Mm-hmm. But we've talked about Phantom Rolls-Royce models, right?
Yes. Had a two-parter on that.
Yeah, two-parter. And we talked about the Phantom Corsair.
Mm-hmm.
And now, today, we're going to talk about Phantom bikes.
Which are, A, completely different, and B, equally cool.
Agreed. Yeah, they're really, really cool. We've done scooter and, Vespa
right.
type products in the mm-hmm. past, and, we've had kind of mixed reviews on what we think of them.
Right.
I don't know, this to me, this is so much cooler than, I like the original Vespas, don't get me wrong.
Okay.
I think those were a cool design, but I think this takes it up a notch for sure.
Absolutely, because this is not a motorcycle. A Phantom bike is a motorized bicycle.
Sounds a little confusing.
Oh, yeah. A bike with an engine.
Terribly confusing. Really.
Terribly confusing.
Yeah, but you're right, though. It's a motorized bicycle. But what does that, kind of harken back to the days of the original motorcycles, right? Because that's kind of where they came from.
Uh-huh.
And these look a whole lot like those original very, very early on motorcycles. I mean, we're talking turn-of-the-century motorcycles.
Right, yeah, like pre-war France kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I've got a whole thing about this that I want to talk about in the middle of this. I've got a sidebar that I think is pretty interesting with kind of the design that these people are going for with Phantom bikes and kind of the history of that. So we'll get to that in a few minutes, but what we're talking about here is these scooter-like like vehicles, really, mm-hmm. that look like motorcycles, but they're far, lower power, I guess.
Right. They're like, let's get into the CCs.
Yeah, sure. Okay. 49 CCs, right?
Right. And that's interesting because in some states, if it's under 50 CC, if an engine is under 50 CC, mm-hmm. then the laws change a little bit.
Very clever on their part because, mm-hmm. See, this makes it really easy for anybody to just buy one and use it. Which is right. really, really cool. Being that they all have these 49cc engines, every model that Phantom Bike offers, at least the ones that I saw online, mm-hmm. There's six listed there currently.
Right. Yep.
And I think that there may be some other variations of those custom-wise we'll talk about too, but they're all 49cc's exactly, and that means that with, well, in some states, we have to talk about that too, but in some states, no license, no registration, no inspections, right. anything like that. You just get on it and go. As long as you have a helmet, you're okay to go. But that's not the case in every state, right?
Yes, great point. Because off air, I checked out some of the moped laws for Georgia and moped laws for Michigan.
And they vary from California, I guess.
And they vary from California. For instance, in Pennsylvania, you can't get away with some of the same stuff you could get away with for a moped in California. Now, the reason we're specifically referencing California goes back to the story of this company, which is this is a very new company. This is 2009?
Yeah, 2009 is the initial idea for this company, which is amazing, really. San Diego, California, to be specific.
Yes.
And California businessman John King, who I believe was a real estate guy at the
time.
Yep. What was the idea? I guess he's just kind of taking a walk on a beach or something and decided that, he saw some beach cruiser bike, the type of the big wheels and the wide seats and everything, and decided, well, maybe wouldn't it be cool if I could just add a motor to that?
And he said this to his friend Sterling Tucker, and they decided, well, we can build better bikes. And so they got two just run-of-the-mill bicycles from a mm-hmm. sports store, and then they started ordering engine kits.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, for some reason, not everybody is, is focused on this type of stuff as we are, right? And
right,
our audience
right.
is. So, John and his friend, they think, like, well, we'd like to put a motorcycle, or rather a small engine on a bike and make it sort of like a motorcycle but a little less powered, thinking it was a brand-new idea. They soon found out that, well, this has really been going on for, like, like 100 years.
Right.
But, you know, not to discount what they're doing, because they thought, and here's the cool part about this, they thought we can do it better. And that's always the key to someone being very successful, I think, is that I'm going to take that idea and I'm going to make it even better. How can I do that? And that's exactly what they did.
Yes, and boy, did they do it well. This idea became, I think in their about section, they say that one bike became two, two mm-hmm. became ten, and now they have a booming business with, as we mentioned before, six separate models, all which are reasonably priced. And you guys know that if I'm saying they're reasonably priced, then they're probably pretty reasonable.
Yeah, and you know, the people saw, you know, people around town saw these things. The way this whole thing kind of grew is organic, I'm sure. And that,
yeah.
You know, they built these two bikes, they're driving them around town, and people are kind of interested in the prototypes and saying, like, I'd buy one of those if you could build one for me. And mm-hmm. so they started to do that. And that's when they became, you know, 2, 4, 10 bikes. They started to grow exponentially. And they did have to go into almost like a warehouse to start with. They said they started in like a 1,000-foot warehouse.
Right, yeah.
And then they quickly, like within a year, they outgrew that and had to go into like a 2,000-square-foot warehouse. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it just keeps growing and growing and growing. The demand for these things is really, really huge. So, you know, very successful. But during the prototype stage, Ben, we mentioned, I think we've mentioned the engines a couple times here, that they're 49cc, right?
Yeah, two-stroke engines.
Yeah, two-stroke originally.
Originally, yes.
Originally
two-stroke. Good point,
good and, point. And the problem was they were originally sourcing these engines from, you know, along with other parts that they need. It's a whole kit that they have to put together in order
right,
to...
Right, clutch, centrifugal clutch.
Exactly. There's a lot that goes into this, but the engine part... the engine part was originally a two-stroke engine, and it was sourced from an LA business. And they learned kind of in the process that they were, you know, investigating, and they realized that the EPA was soon to outlaw two-stroke engines in California, which was a
right.
big problem for them, right?
Yeah.
So they had to look elsewhere, and they found some, and this is kind of the I guess the downside, according to Jay Leno, which you'll find out, you know, in if you watch the video that's on the website.
Yes.
They have visited Jay Leno's garage, by the way, well, just to give that away early. But they have found some four-stroke engines that did meet the EPA standards in California, but they did have to source them from China. So that's the only part that comes from anywhere overseas. The rest of this is built and assembled in San Diego, so it's a product that's built in the USA. But, you know, he gives him a little bit of guff for that on Jay Leno's Garage, by the way.
Yeah, but he's good-hearted about it. There's a 12-minute video that we're referencing on the site for the Phantom Bikes, mm-hmm. which shows Jay Leno visiting, learning about the nature of these bicycles, how they work, or excuse me, mopeds, and what they can do. Trying out a couple different models, they mm-hmm. go on a ride, mm-hmm. and I think that I might be more of a fan of these than Jay Leno is, to be honest with you.
I think I am too. Yeah, he was not, I don't want to say down on him. But,
he wasn't down on him.
No, not at all. In fact, I think he really liked it. But you and I mentioned this earlier that, you know, off air again, that I think he's used to looking at million-dollar cars.
Right.
I think that's probably part of the reason. A bit jaded, maybe. I don't know. I just don't know what to say about this because, I mean, he was excited about them but not overly enthusiastic. And I think I personally think that they're a very cool design. I really, really like these a lot. They're interesting. They're a great commuter vehicle, you know, if used in the right situations, like we talked about, you know.
Just with Vespa, yeah.
But go back to Vespa for our viewpoints on that. But, mm-hmm. I think in the right situation, these are great for city commuters.
Yeah, let's do some numbers real quick.
Okay.
All right. So their top speed here is 30-35 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm. Not very fast.
Not very fast. Now, remember, we talked about Vespas that can go 80.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, some can go 80, which is remarkable.
Now, of course, that is more the exception than the rule. But here's another number that I especially like. One of the models, the Phantom Hibachi Cruiser. It's a entry level. You know, it's not the top of the
sure.
line. It's only 1250.
1250.
1250.
1250. Okay. Okay. You know what? That's the low end of the price range on the
right.
six that they have. So, and I believe, Ben, when you see that listed on the website, that's a kit. It
right.
says it
yeah.
says 1250 for the kit that's available. So I think that it's shipped to you as here's a bicycle, here's your engine and kit.
Mm-hmm.
Now I would assume that you can have one put together. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm sure for a nominal fee. Now, this is interesting, though, because if you do check out their website, they're out of stock of quite a few models.
Yes, out of those six, I don't know, maybe two are available or something like
right,
that
yeah.
at this time. However, you know, I'm sure that you can get on a waiting list. That's probably not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that, you know, they're also working to up production because, you know, the demand for these is getting huge. The
yeah.
other thing is that they range right now in the six models, the top-end model, is around $2,800. That's the Phantom mm-hmm. Phantom Racer,
right? Yeah,
and that's a really cool one. I'll list my. I've got three favorites on this site.
What are your three favorites?
Do you want me to do it right now?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Hang on. It's in descending order.
Okay.
So from number three, is that the right way to say that? I guess from number three, I like the model called the Phantom Ghost Cruiser,
mm-hmm.
which is retails for about $2,500. Yikes.
Is this your wish list?
Yeah, that's right. And the next is my number two would be the Phantom Bobber Cruiser, which they describe, Ben, as mean and low.
Yes.
Which is really cool looking.
Yeah.
That's about $2,300. And then my number one pick would be the Phantom Racer, which is the $2,800 model.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed something as I looked at this. Two things. One, all of my favorites happen to be in the $2,000 range, which is bad for me.
Sure.
The second is that I noticed I like the models that have the handlebars that are low and flat, like the old motorcycles
right.
of the day. And I think that's what really gets me on these things is that they look so cool, and you ride in kind of a hunched over position like mm-hmm. you would an old cycle. The other models, you mentioned the Hibachi Cruiser,
yes,
and the Hibachi Commuter. And I think there's one other one in there, too.
The Jetty Commuter.
Yeah, the Jetty Commuter. Those all have upright handles, and you sit in a very upright position. It's very comfortable, I would assume.
Right, and it's got front suspension and
stuff. They all look very, very comfortable. All of them do, because they have nice, wide, you know, cushioned seats. And
mm-hmm.
they just look like, you know, the big, fat tire cruisers that you see riding around town, but they're motorized.
And they're inspired, according to Mr. King, they're inspired by the Harleys,
wait,
the Harley Davidsons.
We can't go any farther without you telling me what your favorite model is.
Okay, fair enough. I also am a fan of the Phantom Racer.
All right, good for you.
I know that it is a little more at the top end, right?
Yep.
It's the top end, I believe. But it gets really good mileage, too.
It really does.
It gets like 100 miles to the gallon.
Oh, yeah, that's something we should mention. All of these... And not just the Phantom Cruiser, but see, you get the looks with the efficiency in this model because
right.
the Phantom Cruiser. Well, I've got more to say about that in a second.
Okay.
That's my sidebar. Let's get to that next, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
But all of these models, they claim in. I saw a number that says 140 miles per gallon is what they claim on these things. Now so most of these models have a half gallon tank
mm-hmm.
originally.
Yeah.
And I think you can up that because I think the model that. That was on Jay Leno's garage had something like a gallon and a half tank, and that means that the range on that thing is 210 miles. That's a pretty darn good range for
a
scooter. I mean, really nice. So again, you know, I mean, let's say you have a half gallon tank, that's still 70 miles between fill-ups
mm-hmm.
For what? Right about $1.75 or something like that at this point, with the way fuel prices are.
Right, and these are also we should mention. These could be. Very good for people who live in an urban environment.
Yeah.
Just because as Jay Leno pointed out, you're probably not going to go over 35 if you're driving downtown all the time.
No, I wouldn't think so. In fact, you can't really speed on these things. If you're in a neighborhood and the limit's 25, you're just about maxed out on these things. So you don't have to worry about city streets. You can't, you know, if you're out in the general public, I guess.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be able to go faster than the speed limit, so there's no worry there. As long as you're, you know, covered as far as whatever you need for license, registration, helmet, whatever.
Right, yeah.
As long as you're covered with that, you're legal, which is really cool.
But do not, as we said before with Vespas, these are not meant for the interstates. These are not meant for, especially these vehicles, are not meant for roads that have a speed limit of like 50 or 45.
Exactly.
Don't be that guy.
In fact, they've got a lot of you know characteristics of bicycles still.
Right.
You know, they're not really a motorcycle. They're not. They're just kind of a top end moped, I guess. At this top end, as far as the size allowed for scooters, maybe.
Right.
So you know they have things like brakes which are still the pedal brakes where you push backwards on the pedals in order
which
to stop.
Is so cool.
But they also have. Ben, I saw this now in the video. They mentioned that they have tiny drum brakes, right? I saw if you go on the accessories page, which you know they've got a ton of accessories. By the way, they offer a lot of upgrades,
like
to these
rear
things.
Post tank and
all kinds of stuff. I mean, they offer 50 different seats that you can order, and you know, helmets and other safety gear, chains and locks and things. They also offer hydraulic disc brakes now, which is really cool. I don't know. I didn't take a look at the price on the upgrade for that, but that's a nice little upgrade because that would definitely stop you pretty quick.
Yes.
On such a lightweight vehicle. You
know? Also, I'm a much more of a fan of disc brakes in general.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And these things operate on a centrifugal clutch. You know, what's funny, Jay mentioned that he had a go-kart that had a centrifugal clutch.
Yeah.
Mine does too. It's a neat device. I mean, the thing is, when they were trying to show, you know, like revving up the engine, you couldn't rev it while it's just sitting there because it's always in gear, I guess. So that's the only way to say it. You'd have to tip it up on the kickstand,
right,
and then rev it, and that's when the wheel spins up. So same thing with the go-kart, but it's very, very reliable. It's really kind of a cool device. And oh, you know what? I think we even have an article on How Stuff Works about how those actually operate.
Yes. Are you talking about how clutches work, or are you talking about how go-karts work?
I think we have both.
We do have both.
I think we have how centrifugal clutches work. I think we have how go-karts work. I think we have all kinds of stuff now.
And it's a free website. Just want to point that out.
Man, that was a shameless plug.
Shameless plug. What's the sidebar?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I feel like I've been talking a mile a minute. But,
sorry.
But here's the scoop on these things.
Okay.
They are, well, at least one specific model, and my favorite model, your favorite model, the Custom Racer, was designed to look like these old board track racers from the turn of the century. And, you know, we mentioned the old motorcycle thing. You know, the other two models that I mentioned, the Cruiser and the Bobber Cruiser, those also look like motorcycles, but the Phantom Racer in particular is designed to look like a board track racer. And here's where the sidebar comes in. We've got these tracks that have long since disappeared, Ben, but they were made of, here in the United States mostly. I don't know if there were any anywhere else in the world or not. I just don't know.
Okay.
I don't have enough information about it right now. We'll have to do this maybe. But here in the States, there was a trend towards wooden racetracks at the turn of the century.
Ah, yes.
And these things, they look so cool when you see them anywhere. I'm sure that there were some elsewhere in the world, but I know about the U.S. tracks. The thing about them is they were really inexpensive to build. They were difficult to maintain.
Right.
They were not durable at all. In fact, they most of them lasted only about maybe just a few years before they were just kind of left to rot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they completely just disappeared on their own. You know, nature took over, or somebody looted them for the wood, or whatever happened. But basically, the board track trend died with the Depression. So when that happened, it kind of went away. So this is like a big thing in, you know, from early 1900s to, let's say, the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of their time. Get this, Ben. Splinters were actually a serious concern on these things when you're riding, not just when you have an accident, which I'm sure would be horrible,
right,
on
a
board track. Because
if you
look at it, it's an amazing structure. Like, you know, you look at an old wooden roller coaster, and it's like, that's a lot of wood. Well, look at a board track, you know, a photo of a board track, and you won't believe what you see. I mean, you're talking like a mile and a half track made out of, looks like 2x4s on their edge.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Even in the photographs of a new or well-maintained one, they don't look that sturdy.
No, not at all. And, you know, the thing is, I mentioned splinters.
Right.
These were real concerns, I mean, for the guys, of course, and not only, you know, during accidents, but while they were riding. They said that, you know, splinters were often driven into their faces while they were riding, while they were driving these things. So they're racing, and they're having to deal with this as well. And I'm sure that, you know, they wore those thick sweaters.
Right.
Which I think are so cool.
Are they splinter sweaters?
Yeah, well, no, but you know, I'm sure that they were filled with that. But they were getting these things driven in their face while they were driving. Cars, because cars shared the tracks as well.
Right.
Cars would have to have anti-splinter devices fitted to the radiators in order to prevent them from being punctured by these things. So that's how dangerous board track racing was, and it's ridiculously fast. And one last thing on this.
What's that?
I found a video, which was a copy of a film, really, that was done online. You can find this. They just wanted to preserve it. It's the Indian Motorcycle Company.
Oh, cool.
And if you search these keywords, and you'll find this video, and it's about 10 minutes to me, there's no sound. To me, it's worth every minute of it. But it was like someone just wanted to save this thing before it deteriorated and couldn't, you know, it couldn't be viewed anymore. It was like this weird story, but it's at the beginning, but it was like found under the bed of somebody, like an ancestor who passed away at a very elderly age,
wow.
You know, that had kept this film all these years. You know, someone, you know, I think it was a relative who was a racer.
What are the keywords?
If you search for Indian board track racing at Daytona. Indian board track racing at Daytona. It's about a 10-minute and 30-second film from 1920.
Wow.
It's the only one that exists. This says it's number 9 in the series. So, you know, there's others that have been lost to time. Incredible stuff. And one last thing. You know, I mentioned the sweaters, the Indian
yes.
sweaters, and the racing jerseys. They're really cool, these antique jerseys that the drivers or the riders would wear. At the end, you see all the guys, you know, after the race, and they're all kind of crowded around the winner, and, you know, they've got, you know, all the dirt and the goggles and everything.
Right.
They're all wearing these really cool Indian motorcycle racing sweaters. And if you had one of those today, Ben, I can't even imagine the value. A couple thousand dollars, maybe? Amazing stuff. It's really, really cool looking. But to have even like a reproduction of that would be really neat.
Hint, hint, everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a really amazing sidebar too, because I didn't think we were going to go there. But
yeah.
But that's one of the neat things about these bikes, I think, is the stylistic callback to not just that period in time, but some other periods. On the website, they mention the Harley-Davidson knuckleheads.
Mm-hmm.
And I can definitely see the resemblance there, too. What the rabbit hole I fell into, and we don't have time, I guess, to do it, unfortunately, so stop me if I go too crazy, was the fascinating history of motorized bicycles.
Oh, yeah. There's a ton out there about this. And you'll see, if you search motorized bicycles and then phantom bikes, you'll see how similar these are in design. They're mm-hmm. really, really interesting.
And this this function for which these vehicles are built is largely unchanged. It's you want to take a short trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
But too far to walk, and you want to carry some things, and you want to be able to have some more latitude than you might have if you're in a car and a traffic jam or something.
And unlike a motorcycle, these things are light enough to pick up. So you're able to carry it up to your loft apartment, mm-hmm. or you're able to put it on the front of a bus if you need to, you know, to commute a little further. So, you know, there's a lot of really solid benefits to these things. And just, you know, from the style aspect, if you go to phantombikes.com, look at the gallery photos, and then also, you know, just check around online and see what other people have done with them, because I've seen people who have taken long, long trips on these things as well.
Yes.
I think just looking at these things, you'll get this nostalgic feel for exactly what they're going for.
No muffler, though, by the way, so if you're looking for a quiet vehicle.
But there's a straight pipe. And that's just for heat purposes, you know, just getting the heat from the front of the engine by your legs to the back.
Yeah.
It's just a bent piece of pipe that then it can be wrapped with some kind of cool, looks like almost like header wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks really neat. You can get a wide variety of those as well on the accessories page, but no muffler, you're right, not necessary. They sound really cool.
I have two things. One of them, only one of them is related to this.
Okay.
And only tangentially. So if you're checking out Phantom Bikes and you've enjoyed this episode enough to say, hey, that's pretty reasonable, I would love to build one of those, you're going to find a very different bike as well floating out there on the internet. I don't know if you saw it, Scott.
Oh, you know what?
The bike with the missing front strut?
I did, yeah. It's like an art student's bike,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so what's the story with that? I mean,
so this bike, which is almost, it's like a concept car, kind of. I don't know if it'll be in production or anything, but the front strut is missing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's a phantom, because there's a phantom front strut. And instead of having the front strut, the whole bike sort of has this, I don't know, like a sideways J shape.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the front tire, the front wheel is still there, and it's still operated by the handlebars through some pretty spiffy gear work. But when I was checking this out, I fell into a rabbit hole looking at this, thinking of having one, and apparently it's a pretty good bike. I don't know.
It looks kind of cool because you mentioned the you hold onto the steering wheels, and everything below that is missing to the wheel. But it still controls the wheel. I didn't know that.
The handlebars still work.
It almost looks like you can control this just by leaning.
Uh-huh.
It's a really odd-looking bike. It's painted solid white. This is completely separate from what we're talking about here, though.
It's like, totally
as far as
different.
Phantom bikes, yeah. You know, one last thing?
Yes.
The kit. We mentioned the kit, right?
Oh, yeah. We have to mention the kit.
This is really important because I think this is kind of where their business spawned from, where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
I've used the word spawn twice in this podcast.
Well, I used it, too.
Interesting. Okay. That's three. okay. So you can buy a kit from Phantom Bikes, and basically what it does is it allows you to convert almost any V-frame bicycle to a 49cc powered bicycle, mm-hmm. and it costs, I think it's around $475 is what the kit costs right now online. They may change up or down, depends on what happens. But so if you have an old cruiser bike or that you want to convert to one of these, if you have an idea that it'd be better if you could somehow power this thing to get into town or whatever, give it a shot. I mean, it's $500, so that's kind of expensive, $475. But maybe it's a new life for that old bike that's been hanging in your garage.
And what a cool project, especially if you have if you've been thinking about what you want to get your kid for their birthday or something, and they're mechanically inclined.
Yeah.
This would be really neat.
Oh, and you could go totally custom with it. You could even make little body panels and everything with it. Because look at the Phantom Racer. They've got some kind of body fairing to them. Not a lot, but just enough that makes it look really cool, like a motorcycle-ish, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody at home were to have the skill to do that kind of metal work and welding, et cetera, in combination with this kit that you can buy, which does a lot of the work for you.
It's true. That's true.
They've already kind of, they've figured everything out for you on that end. This could be a really cool project. All right, Ben. So I've got a piece of listener mail here that this is kind of a back-and-forth email situation here with myself and a guy named Stuart. And Stuart is from Flagstaff, Arizona.
Stuart from Arizona.
Yeah. So Stuart wrote in about our Vespa podcast. He says, thanks, guys, for the great podcast on Vespas and scooters. He says he got on the scooter bandwagon in 2003, where the gas prices were really climbing, and a scooter was a great alternative to my Chevy Avalanche.
So about a contrast.
That's a major contrast. So he bought a scooter called a Kymco Bet. And a Win 250, and his wife. Oh, so he got two. And his wife got a Vespa ET4 that same year. So he says we're absolutely right about them belonging in the right environment. You got to pick your time and place for these things.
Right. Yeah.
And he lives and works in Flagstaff, but he goes all over town in this thing. Speed limits are around 40, so it's easy for him. He says it will do 80 on his 250. The 250
wow.
model that he has, but the little tiny wheels make it a scary ride, so he doesn't like to do that.
Now this is the guy you guys did have a back and forth earlier today, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you what I wrote back in a minute, and then his response. But it says he used it. He uses it mostly, just around town. But one time he did drive to Phoenix on his moped, which is it's a pretty good distance. I mean, I looked it up. It's about. I think it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes by car on the highway.
Oh, wow.
And he did back roads, which took him about 3.5 hours, as I found out later, which is that's a significant amount of time on a scooter. But I think a back road trip on a scooter might be really fun out in the desert.
Yeah, it'd be really neat because, again, there's so much more latitude mm-hmm. with the scooter. You can I don't know. There's something cool about that idea that you could just – go on the back roads, see something interesting, and stop and hang out.
See, he mentioned that he had to spend about 20 or so miles on Interstate 17 because, just the way the roads were. He said that was not something that he ever wants to do again because it was awful. It was kind of terrifying.
Be kind of frightening to be next to a big rig there.
Yeah, I would think so. There's probably a lot of semi-traffic out there. So, we did this back and forth, and my question to him, this is maybe a funny question to you or to anybody, really. I wondered, he's got this giant vehicle, this Avalanche, right?
Uh-huh.
He's got a couple of scooters, and he's doing a lot of desert driving. And have you been out west?
Yes.
Okay, so you know that it can be a long, long way. You've got to really plan how much fuel you have in the tank between cities because there's just nothing in between.
Right. Those sometimes those signs that say last gas 50 miles are serious.
Absolutely serious, and that is a long 50 miles if you're watching the fuel gauge the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So my question was, you know, with all this desert driving that he obviously has to do, does he ever throw the Vespa in the back of the Avalanche as kind of a dinghy?
Yeah.
Like a lifeboat, right? And because it seems like to me, that's what I wrote, is that if you had an empty gas tank, a gas can, and a Vespa, fully, you know, fully fueled Vespa in the back of the thing, you would never be too far away from a gas station. You'd be able to, you know, it's kind of like a lifeboat, like I said. You could scooter into the next town, buy fuel, bring it back to your stranded vehicle, and be on your way. And he wrote back and said, you know, it's not a bad idea, but it's tough to get a Vespa in the back of, or any scooter really, in the back of a pickup truck, especially a big pickup truck like
mm-hmm.
that, with one person. With two people, it's much more possible. But then you get the situation of, you know, who stays behind with the broken down vehicle and all that. He didn't mention all that, but I'm assuming.
They did fit it into the other vehicle, though. They fit one of the scooters in.
He's actually done it. He's lifted it into his Avalanche, and he and his son lifted it into a Subaru Baja, I think it was.
That's
he said it was,
what it was.
A tight fit, but it fit. And it was easy for them to get it into there. But he did say that, you know, one time he took his truck to Las Vegas and, you know, cruised around in the town on the scooter. Well, the truck was having some repairs made, and that was like a great, you know, a great thing to have. It's almost like when you arrive somewhere in a big RV and you've got the towed vehicle behind that you, know, you can detach and drive around. It's similar to that idea. But so, anyways, I enjoyed talking with Stuart, and he had some good insight on, you know, exactly how useful scooters can be in even in like a desert situation like that with towns long distance away.
It'd be pretty cool to have one of those. Just I don't know how I would fit it into Monte Carlo. Maybe I need some sort of folding scooter.
Maybe, yeah. Like, oh, how about this? You ever seen the go-kart that fits into a briefcase?
Yes.
Or a suitcase, maybe.
Yeah, it's a suitcase.
A suitcase go-kart. That would be a good idea.
That's a great idea. I'm going to get right on that, which means that we'll have to get out of here today. You guys, thank you so much for listening. We hope that you have enjoyed our show on Phantom bikes. We would love to hear about your moped experiences, especially, you know what I'm going to say, Scott? Especially if somebody has built one of these from a kit.
Sure, or if they happen to own a Phantom bike that was built by the factory, that would be really cool.
Yes, those would both be equally cool. Give us a shout on Facebook. Let us know what you think via Twitter. And if you're feeling old-fashioned, drop us an email at
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.